Tom McSweeney here, and you're welcome to my Seascapes Maritime programme, with the voices of Irish maritime people discussing current topics in maritime Ireland. This programme comes to you on the Marine Times website. The government's budget for next year reduced the amount of money provided for the fishing industry at a time when it's facing big challenges to its future. 19.5 million euros has been cut from fisheries, reducing government support to 157.7 million, compared with the funding allocation of 177 million for this year. That's a sizeable reduction and a blow to the industry, which has been pleading with the government to support it, and through it, coastal communities and business sectors dependent upon it. There is anger in the industry about the cut. Brendan Byrne, Chief Executive of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association, told me why.
As far as I can see from working in this industry for the last 5 years, we have a very much ballooned support sector, and the relevance of some of the actions of those needs to be looked at. I think that the industry, if we look at the industry from catch and sector right through to processing and everything else, is suffering. We are on a downward trajectory post Brexit TCA, yet there's very little funding actually filtering its way to the frontline industry. If you exclude bar, and I have my own views on bar from a processing point of view, how little of it was prioritised for there. But if you exclude bar, all the funding from MFAF down, the greater priority of that is going to support state agencies and such, without prioritising the industry itself. And that has to be looked at, because let no one be under any illusion here. We are in the eye of the greatest crisis that has ever beheld or fell upon the Irish fishing industry. It is the greatest crisis. We're just stabilising, not recovering. We're just stabilising after Brexit and the TCA. And here we have now facing into a reality, and further advice on NEPFROPS will be issued on Friday. The reality is that there are potentially up to 200 million euros of further losses to be taken out of the industry over a 12-month period. It's economic Armageddon at its worst. And I'm not convinced that that's resonating with the powers of the be, apart from the minister who addressed the issue very clearly at the council meeting in Luxembourg and indeed in the Dáil. But some of the reports I'm reading recently, and indeed over the last year, I'm beginning to wonder what industry are they writing about. They're certainly not writing about the industry that I represent.
There certainly are a proliferation of agencies, state agencies in the fishing industry, supposedly helping the industry, but you don't seem to think that's happening.
No, look, as I have often commented on, since 2017, we're on a downward trajectory that has been greatly exaggerated and accelerated in speed by Brexit TCA and now by the ICES advice of the 30th of September. And I think we're in parallel universes. The industry on the ground knows exactly how bad things are, where the challenges are, and how the recovery is slow, if not at all. And yet, if I open a report 24 hours before the ICES report was published, I read a report saying that profits in some sectors were up 180%. I had to script through the report and scan through the report to see what country they were talking about. Lo and behold, it was Ireland. This kind of parallel universe that some people want to occupy at a time when there's great suffering and absolute challenge in the sector is not doing anyone any justice.
Brendan Byrne there, Chief Executive of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters Association, outlining the serious situation for the Irish fishing industry and criticism of the government's reduction in budgetary financial support. Dominic Ryan, Chief Executive of Killybegs Fishermen's Organisation, added his reaction.
The KFO notes a potential reduction in funding for the sector in 2026 compared to 2025 in the order of around 20 million. The reasons for this are not altogether clear. Obviously, following from the catastrophic cuts and quotas being proposed for 2026, any reduction in funding is highly concerning. We urge the government through Minister Dooley to allocate emergency funding for 2026 to help the industry through these challenging times and provide a platform to build a sustainable future for the sector.
Dominic Ryan, CEO, Killybegs Fishermen's Organisation, underlining concern in the fishing industry about the cut in government funding. Here with my monthly Seascapes Maritime programme and podcast, discussing our island nation's marine culture, history and development. Maritime pilots do a unique job, bringing ships into and safely from our ports, which are our gateways to the world, through which over 90% of Irish exports and imports are transported. I met them in Limerick at the annual conference of the Association of Maritime Pilots, where Chairman Patrick Galvin called for more government commitment to ports and pilots. He's a pilot at Shannon's Foynes Port Company. That's on the beautiful Shannon Estuary, deepest sheltered commercial harbour and largest bulk port, the company says. And he discussed with me the conference topic, the value of pilotage. What and why is the need for more government commitment?
What are laws in Ireland? The 1996 Harbours Act, and particularly the pilotage section of the 1996 Harbours Act, evolved from the 1913 Pilotage Act, which was written by the British. And it's remained largely unchanged. There's a lot going on internationally, we'll say, with the IMO. They have a recommendation for training and certification of pilots. And this would, it's designed to be adopted into national laws. So this, we have no standards in Ireland for maritime pilots, and it would be good to introduce minimum standards for training, certification, minimum entry standards as well, as in saying you need at least officer certification, master certification to become a pilot. And there should be a baseline throughout all Irish ports that a pilot is trained for. So you can imagine, Tom, if you're a ship captain coming into a port and the pilot, the guy coming or girl coming up the pilot ladder, you expect them to be trained to a certain standard. And in fairness, a lot of our ports are doing an excellent job, but some of them not so much. And a lot of it is because there's no requirement there for them to do it. So it's time we look at how pilotage is managed within our country. And the one thing I'd say is people will always say, well, what about cost? And cost in training is an investment in resilience, an investment in the Irish ports. So it's not enough to, we'll say, just invest in the ports, but you need to invest in the people as well. And it all works together then seamlessly. And this will help secure national supply chains, protect our environment, protect national infrastructures like our piers, jetties, bridges, which ships pass on a regular basis.
One of the points you did make is that the increasing size of vessels is a concern and a demand extra on pilots, and that technology won't necessarily overcome that. That technology itself has to be subject to the human level.
Yeah, it's a great point. And one of the things that I see particularly, I worked a lot with the European Maritime Pilots Association, and I used to hear a lot of complaints, particularly from the eastern side of the Baltic, where GPS, global navigational satellite systems, their signals are being scrambled. So these ships going in and out of ports have no satellite navigation systems. Their radar screens can be scrambled as well. So it's relying then purely on the skill of the pilot to get that ship in and out of port. Because if you haven't got a navigation system that you can rely on, then you need a person. And the ultimate safety is having somebody from the state on board a ship, a pilot, looking after the national interest to get that ship in and out of port. So if all those systems fail, having somebody there that knows these rocks are here, they've all visual marks, they can navigate by sight and hearing, plus all available means, but those all available means might be taken away. So you need core skills developed with technological know-how. And if the technology fails, you can then fall back on those core skills.
And we talk often about sea blindness. People don't understand or know enough about the sea. They probably don't know enough about pilots either. Occasionally we see pictures, the dangers of pilots climbing ladders to get aboard ship. Good weather must be fine, but bad weather, it can be a challenging, difficult, dangerous job at times.
It's about managing risk, Tom, to be honest with you. It's getting on a ship. If the weather's that bad, we stop pilotage. because there's always going to be another tide. There's generally speaking our storms that blow through in a day, day and a half, and that ship can come in then. So it's protection of life and safety must be at the forefront. After that, then, you know, we have to consider, go out, take a look at the pilot ladder. Is it safe to climb? Is the pilot boat properly equipped? Is that up to scratch? Are the crew properly trained and man overboard? Because if I fall into the water, I rely on the pilot boat crew to get me back out. So this is, all these factors come into play when getting on and off a ship. And as you say, this is the commute to work. It's not exactly what we do for work, is getting on and off ships. And some, I see some of the videos on YouTube about pilots getting on and off ships. They're not great, and they're a little bit inflammatory, and it's not a fair representation of our industry, I think.
You make the point that pilots are essential to the economy and that they get in the ships, they get them out carrying the exports and the imports. That's not fully understood in public, is it?
Nobody knows what a pilot is. Most of the time when I tell people I'm a pilot, they look up to the sky. And I go, no, I'm on a ship. And they go, does that just happen here? And I says, no, it happens in every port in the world. There's a maritime pilot. And we are a very unknown group. But I would say also, people don't know much about ports. Unless the only time people know about actually the shipping industry itself is when an accident like the Dali happens, where that bridge collapsed in Baltimore, or the Ever Given, the ship that blocked the Suez Canal. It's when major accidents like that happen, when supply chains are interrupted, when people aren't getting the loaf of bread on the shop shelf, then they go, how the hell does that loaf of bread get to the shop shelf initially? And then it's the maritime sector. I think just over 90% of our imports and exports in Ireland are by ship, facilitated through our ports. And without pilots, ports, the country will grind to a halt within a few days. And it's a critical service that we provide, ensuring the safety of ships coming in, which then ensures supply chains remain open.
And keeps the consumers supplied. Final point, Patrick, is all of that work understood fully at government level, at state level? You called for investment in people, obviously the pilots, investment in ports. The structure of the ports is invested in. Are the pilots invested in enough?
Some ports, like I say, do a fantastic job in training. Others could do better. That's why I said government needs to look at how this is managed in Ireland. The pilotage services are managed by each and every port in Ireland. And it's not just because a lot of the ports in Ireland don't fall under the Harbours Act. Some are fishing ports, which provide pilotage services, and some are county council ports, which provide pilotage services as well. So it's not just enough to look at, we'll say, Harbours Act ports, but it's all the ports in Ireland that provide pilotage services. How are these managed? How are these guys trained, or girls? And take it from there. It's a critical service. And even the small ports, we'll say Galway is a relatively small port, to do a fantastic job there. The pilots and the port are very responsible in how to manage their pilotage. But that alone, that port handles all the petroleum products. And just say ships come into Dublin port, for example, all that cargo would have to be trucked across Ireland. So it's an environmental incentive as well to move as much cargo as possible by ships, because that's the cleanest way to do it.
It takes a lot to become a pilot. Years of maritime experience, you just don't step into the job. Like yourself, years at sea, do you enjoy the job?
I love being a pilot. It takes about a minimum of 12 years to get to Master Mariner's level, and then a few years experience as a ship's captain. And then a lot of the ports in Ireland will only accept you after that as a pilot. And it takes a lot of time and dedication away from family, friends, to get to that level. I was lucky in that I come from a family of pilots. My uncle was a pilot, my grandfather, great-grandfather, I think back to around the 1850s. So I knew I had to go to sea to become a pilot. So that was always the ambition in my life. And it was always a driving force to come back to the Shannon and here and be a pilot. So before I did that, I worked with Stenaline as captain on Dublin Holyhead, and I know there's a lot of talk about that today and the closure of Holyhead, but you know, the ferry companies, the state managed it very well to divert all that cargo through our other ports. And it's nice to have ports that can serve as a backup as well in the event of something happening that none of us want to happen.
Patrick Galvin there, chairman of the Association of Marine Pilots, discussing the work and their vital contribution to Ireland's economy. Now, there is a shortage of seafarers, not alone in Ireland, but internationally. Arklow Shipping is the biggest shipping company in Ireland. It's greenhulled vessels, a well-known sight in the ports and on European seaways. John Conlon is their marine superintendent, the man who oversees its operations. And at the pilots' conference, he spoke about the shortage of seafarers and what he noticed when interviewing applicants for posts with the company at the National Maritime College in Cork.
I've noticed even we do interviews in the college for taking on cadets, and I have noticed a reduction in the numbers coming through, and also the numbers qualifying and then subsequently working their way through the ranks to the, say, master or chief engineer. So you can see there is a drop-off in initial intake, but also in the outturn at the end at the higher ranks.
Is there a reason you can put your finger on for this?
I think it might be a combination of things, but I know from my own side of it, like we'll say, I'm from County Louth, and there's very little advertisement, even still up there. Now, it's over 20 years since I went down to the college. Then I didn't know anything about it. It was just I happened to be talking to somebody who spoke about the college. Up there in the schools, it was all either Navy or Army. There was nothing there was nothing about the Merchant Navy. It was all about the Navy and Hull Bowling. But even to this day, I get a lot of phone calls from parents of kids who are interested in it, and they still don't know where to go or how to go about it. So I think advertisement outside of Cork, I think, needs to be a priority, really, to be honest. And then there seems to be a big drop-off rate from what I can see. You might get a lot of guys, we say, who come in as cadets, but then they drop out at the lower ranks instead of going the whole way to either master or chief engineer. Because probably there is more opportunities coming up for shore jobs, and like we spoke about, a lot of the entry requirements for a lot of these shore jobs have decreased, so there's more people kind of going into the shore jobs earlier instead of going the whole way to get their masters or their chief engineers. So that kind of takes a lot out of it too.
That's the attraction of more time at home, I suppose, and the challenges of staying at sea for a while.
Yeah, look, it can be difficult depending on what part of the industry you're in. You could be at sea for 12 weeks at a time, or depending on, again, where you are, it could be weeks, a couple of weeks, 1 week, 2 weeks, or months. So I think a lot of the attraction is to come ashore, so you're not away for such a long period of time.
I suppose that's understandable, and it's important, obviously, John, for Arklow Shipping, being the biggest operating company, so well known everywhere as the green-hulled ships, and you need seafarers.
Absolutely, absolutely. And look, at having gone through the system, and I do believe that the college in Cork is very good. There's a very good bunch of lecturers down there, and the facilities are very good. And from ones that we've taken on, I can see that the standard that comes out of there is very good. So we are keen to take the Irish or whatever nationality that are coming out of the college, but trained down there, you know, because there is a good standard coming out of it.
And finally, times are good at Arklow Shipping. You're planning more expansion even. You're really progressing.
Yeah, we try to keep the fleet young, and there is expansion in the fleet. Yeah, the numbers are up and in increasing. All right.
And for yourself, John, there's an attraction in seafaring. You enjoyed it, I take it. Even you went ashore, obviously, but you enjoyed your time at sea. Would you recommend it?
I would recommend it. Yeah. I mean, what I always say to the guys starting out that might ask me about it, it's not easy. Obviously, the first 3 or 4 years, it's difficult. You do your time at sea, you do your time in college. But once you get your qualification, OOW, or if you go the engine route, EOW, it's guaranteed employment. You know, there's ship owners and shipping companies are crying out for crews and officers. And if you go and do your time in college and get your qualifications, it's guaranteed employment at the end of it. And there's not many degree courses that you can go and do and walk out of college with a guaranteed job at the end of it. But but in this sector, it is.
John Condon of Arklow Shipping, discussing the shortage of seafarers and the importance of recruiting more. Now, it's not usual to hear criticism of a lifeboat crew for not rescuing those in trouble on the sea. Historian Anton O'Callaghan, in our history slot, recalls a time when that did happen.
It is scarcely imaginable to find the words lifeboat, crew and cowardice in the same sentence. The heroic actions of those risking and sometimes giving their lives, attempting to save fellow seafarers in peril, has for generations been taken as a foundation upon which modern seafaring operates. Nevertheless, those very words were used when, in October 1871, the Drogheda Harbour Board met to discuss the recent loss of the brig Manly and six of the seven crew on board. On Tuesday night, the 28th of September 1871, the 165-ton brig Manly, under the command of Captain John Graham, was en route from Newport to Dublin, laden with coals and a crew of seven. Twin-masted, the brigantine had been active in the Irish sea trade for over 50 years, trading to Drogheda port on a regular basis. A severe southeast gale was blowing, and the brig was driven aground near the Mornington Bettistown beach. A fearful sea battered the vessel, which began to take on water, and so the crew of seven took to the rigging, hoping and praying for rescue. On the mainland, Captain Fackrell, R.N., was the chief officer of the Queensborough Baltray Coast Guard station on the north side of the river, 3 miles from the stranded vessel. He initiated a call-out and readied the lifeboat Old George Irlam from Liverpool, which belonged to the Drogheda Port Authority, to respond to the emergency. Only two answered the call, however. Nevertheless, they launched and headed for the ship in peril. In the ever-deteriorating conditions, the reduced crew found it impossible to battle against the storm and the inrushing tide. Becoming ever more exhausted, the captain of the lifeboat, fearing for their own lives, eventually commanded his crew to turn around, leaving the crew of the Manly to their fate. One crew member fell from the rigging but managed to make his way ashore. The other six were lost to the sea. The sole survivor was washed towards the shore and saved when one Miss Jane Campbell waded into the waters and, with the help of a Miss Fox from Kells, dragged the exhausted sailor ashore. It was at a meeting of the Drogheda lifeboat authorities in early October that a damning account was recorded. Every member of the board, it was reported, pronounced an opinion on the fact that had the superintendent of the lifeboat and his crew acted their part, not only as parties who were paid for attending to the duty, but as human beings having a feeling for their fellow creatures shivering in the shrouds, they would have made an effort to save the six lives sacrificed to their cowardice. It was also resolved that the lifeboat station should be relocated and a new crew be retained. The following year, 1872, a new station was located at the south side of the river at Mornington, which served until 1926. And in 1899, the Baltray station was closed. Whether an act of cowardice or the only sensible action of Captain Fackrell to protect his own crew when faced with an impossible situation, the events surrounding the loss of the brig Manly and six of her crew passed into history. That was until 2022, when singer-songwriter S.J. McArdle recounted the story in a ballad included in his album Old Ghosts in the Water. The song details the heavy hearts of the crew as they abandoned their rescue attempt and were unfairly blamed for cowardice by the public and the press. The fateful events were also recorded when, in 2024, the Drogheda Port Authority commissioned local artist Emily McCormack to paint the scene based on McArdle's song. The painting showed the three lifeboat men straining every fibre in their ultimately failed attempt to overcome the fearsome waves and reach the crew of the brig Manly. Sadly, it was not to be.
Anton O'Callaghan and a lifeboat story from before the time of the RNLI, which brings us to the end of this month's Maritime Voyage on Seascapes. Thanks for being part of the maritime community, and your comments are very welcome. Email me, tommcsweeneyseascapes@gmail.com. That's tommcsweeneyseascapes@gmail.com. Maritime reportage continues throughout the month on Seascape's social media channels, Facebook, X, Twitter, Blue Sky, and on our website, Tom McSweeney, marinepodcast.ie. And also in the Marine Times November edition, Ireland's only maritime newspaper in the shops and online. Until the 1st of December and the next edition of Seascapes, the usual wish of fair sailing.